Hey guys, popping in with a reminder to sign up for the GovHub newsletter. This weekly pop of politics is designed to share action items, resources, and quick links to civic engagement tools and topics directly to your inbox. Save it, share it, and sign up for a pinch of productive politics today by going to girlonthegov.com or visiting this episode's description.
Welcome back to Girl on the Gov, the podcast,
where we're shooting the shit with elected officials and candidates running for office to get to know the person beyond the politics.
Because politicians needed a rebrand. I'm hungry. That's the best way I can open this show today. I'm
hungry.
Same, and my Thai food is on the way, and I'm so excited.
Oh my God, that sounds so good.
Fuck. Sorry. Well, maybe so. Have you ordered dinner yet?
No, it's okay. It's like,
okay,
I'll make dinner. It's 4:30. It's that time where I'm like, am I 80 years old? Am I going to eat at like 5 o'clock? Maybe.
Honestly, I usually have like dinner one. Like if I'm not going out to dinner at like 4:30, and then I have a second dinner at like 9:30, 10.
I respect that.
Like I'm a two-dinner girl. Like,
yeah.
I don't know how people are literally satisfied, like food-wise.
Do you have
like,
lunch?
I'm just an eater. I usually, honestly,
or breakfast.
I like love breakfast food. Like love, 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 love. But I actually don't wake up hungry. Like I don't get hungry till like about like 11. I don't know like why or whatever. But
she's
an
intermittent faster, everyone.
By total accident. But then once the floodgates open of like the eating of the day.
Right.
But I'm also, to add to this, I'm not a big snacker. I like love meals. Not and either. I drove my parents.
I love meals.
Meals are just the best. I want a warm meal, like a whole thing. Mm-hmm. I want some rice type of dish. I want a veggie. I want a meat. I want a whole freaking caboodle.
I love one thing about me. I love a meal. Yeah. I also love and respect a snack, but I'm usually like just having the three meals of the day. Like I'm not really snacking in between, which I'm proud of myself for. I know that's a slippery slope to be a snacker.
Well, usually
but some people only snack and don't meal.
I'm a snacker, but the snacks are also meals. See, like see. If you have pizza for your snack.
Yeah. What is that?
Right. But
riddle
I will say
me
this
that.
Here we are trying to solve the world's biggest quandaries on this podcast. I saw a very interesting, okay, I was sent this thought starter. Where did I put my phone?
I love a thought starter.
Yeah. This like, my friend Sarah sent me this and it was on that account that you should care about. And it's this screenshot and it's like, you know, clearly like from like a TikTok or whatever. And it's this woman saying, I have a theory that every time women get too powerful, the skinny trend reemerges to keep us all too tired to create or vote.
Oh my God. Thought provoking
like,
indeed.
Right? So then it just got me thinking, obviously, because thought starter, that tends to happen with a thought starter, you know?
No, this is true. And we literally have evidence of it. Like, not the specific like cultural trend, but there is a current one happening that is very clear. And, you know, maybe the skinny one is also one, but the trad wife of it all, the like, trad wife, be a homemaker and create a garden that like I would absolutely love that life. Like it's nothing wrong with it. It's just there is like a clear and deliberate plan that's actually literally being funded by some of the same people who are funding the campaigns and efforts to take our rights away that are also kind of like infiltrating culture to also make women like reconsider like, do I want this career? It's intentional. And so I just want to make that point that like there is literally a like funded effort around this like culture shifting thing. So it's real. And I was just, you know, always critically think.
No. Okay. Literally that. And you explained that so well. So like G bless, because I think the people need to hear it. Also like on another dynamic of this, besides that, like this is like a distinct strategy that's being used and culture shifting and like funding pieces to do that is not a new strategy. We just have social media integrated into this one and front and center because we're all addicted to our phones. Nonetheless, the one core bit where I feel like they're failing on this strategy is the fact that like the dudes still suck. So it's like, oh, like, okay, so you're going to like go be a trad wife and then he won't pay for anything because he's like, oh, I split everything. you're like, okay, well, that makes no sense. Like, why would I ever sign up for that? Does that make sense?
It does. It does. And to be honest, there's also been some whiplash. Women have had to like truly overcorrect because of hello patriarchy, to the point where there has been like such an aggressive push on this idea of feminism, when really the whole time it was just like, we just want the choice to choose whether we want to like be a homemaker and stay at home or have a career. And we've gotten to the place where like both are possible and both are great. But it's like the culture shifting through the years to getting to this point, you know, like there's just like been such a whiplash around this culture of like the girl boss era. So that's kind of like died a little bit. To now it's like maybe a more balanced era, which is great. But like, it's also just been like such a whiplash of like feminist culture through the years that has been hard.
Totally. I definitely think there's like a whiplash through it. But I also think even if you have whiplash, like figure it out, go to a therapist, go for a walk, touch some grass. I don't know what to tell you. Like, don't become a mass shooter. Like it's really like,
how it should be for literally everyone is like both men and women. We're also just really talking about this like heteronormative relationship. Yeah. Obviously there's a spectrum, but like, we also just need to get to a place now where like you, man, build a life for yourself and for your future family one day, just like I'm going to, because at the end of the day, it should be an equal partnership where like we can both be homemakers and we can both be breadwinners, or we can break off and split that job up. Men can also be the homemaker, women can be the breadwinner. You know, it's just like, build the life like you want, be a good whole person and like work on that, and then find a partnership that can like complement you in that. I think like for so long, men have looked to women to like fill a void in them, and women have looked to men to fill a void within them. And I think it's just like, come to a partnership when you're whole. Can we just have everyone like decide to do that, please? Because I feel like that should be the bare minimum.
Put that on a motherfucking shirt. I'm not going to buy it.
Guys, what is going on today? Where did this conversation come from? Just truly, full TED Talk.
Like literally TED Talk. You know, hit us up, give us a little call, because clearly
we're actually now a self-help spiritual podcast. Tell your therapist you listen to a really interesting podcast today.
Well, I will say one other thing on this topic is I just do think like, and obviously we see it in politics so much, is this like identity politics, but I feel like it's also like cultural. Like I felt like always you can only be like sort of like one thing. And I feel like that's still been an issue. And somehow every time we try and like lift ourselves out of that thinking, almost maybe the political sphere pulled us back into it. Cause it's like, you can only be a Democrat if you're this, you can only be a Republican if you're this, or like whatever, or like if you believe this, you're a bad person. Like, you know what I mean? Like,
which is also a coordinated effort, because the powerful are the most powerful when we're all divided and siloed and separate. You know, we all have so much in common. We really do. And I think the more that, and politics really is a way that divides us, and it's intentional. Like, we've talked about this, I think, on this show so many times, but like, when people are divided and fighting against each other, they're not looking up above them to the people in power who are like intentionally making this happen. And totally. And that also goes for cultural things. Meanwhile, I'm fucking wearing a camo hat almost every day because the liberals are taking camo back, as I tell the conservative men in my life. I'm just kidding. That's me being divisive. I'm just kidding.
And I think like almost like doing this is like, oh my God, I'm about to pop a titty in my, like, I promise this outfit is cute standing up. It really is not. I'm looking like a little farm boy sitting down, and I'm like not loving it. I promise it's cute standing up. Nonetheless, all this to be said, and a good example of like shit that's actually like happening that bridges gaps and everything is like in our newsletter this week with the GovHub. We have a section there, if you're not familiar, called Back on Our Bullshit. We feature bills, good, bad, indifferent, the whole nine yards. And this week's includes three bipartisan bills, one dealing with small business, one dealing with consumer transparency, and another one also dealing with sort of consumer issues of manufacturing with infant formula. So like really important shit that's actually happening, and there's bills. Yeah, like love it.
And that affects like everyone, depending on where you fall on the political spectrum and who you vote for. We all have these issues in common of these things that affect our lives, like fucking baby formula and like crucial things that we should have basic rights to. But yeah, it just like shows, it shows how it sweeps into everyone's lives, no matter like where you are.
Yeah.
Or where you live or what you believe.
I think too, because like part of why I wanted to like make sure that this week's issue had a lot of bipartisan bills in it was because I had a lot of reaction in my DMs last week about like the Republicans blocking the Contraception Act and just like this feeling of like hopelessness from people that I know are Republican, Independent, and Democrat. And I was like, and people very much literally saying like, I'm so over politics and just can't even like, I used to pay attention. This is just so frustrating. And like what I like actually pointed them to was Future Caucus. And we've had a bunch of members from the Future Caucus. We have another one coming up on the show talking about how they work across the aisle. I'll link to that episode in the show notes. But like, just like this shit does exist. And we have to do a better job at highlighting it and making sure that like we can actually like even ourselves, like play the role of connecting the dots for people and making sure like as much as we make fun of some of the absolutely insane things that are going on too, which is like important to laugh, hashtag trauma, that we also like celebrate the wins and like that type of thing. So we're not signed up for our newsletter. So this is your hint. So many wins.
There's so many wins. And there's so many cool people doing really cool work who are just like you. There's so many good things happening in the things you see online and things that go viral or the things that are on the news. Like, those are the sensationalized things that they know are going to like drive you crazy intentionally, because to circle back to like my literal first point of like divisiveness is good for those in power who want to like keep control. So in order to empower yourself and others, continue to look at the good news, continue to look at the policy that's being passed on the local, state, and federal level sometimes to gain your power back. I think that's important.
Amen. Anyway,
well, let's introduce our guest. That was a great soapbox. I feel like a second week in a row of just soapbox city on this intro. And now we have an incredible guest who does incredible work to highlight. So Samantha, kick us off.
Okay, let's get into it. Our guest today is Will Rollins, and he is running for Congress in California. So obviously we get into his race, like what is going on, who he's trying to beat. Like, that's important. And also, this was something that was so top of mind after we left this interview, was just the need to elect more normal people.
Normal people. Literally to circle. Like
normal people 2024.
Literally. If that ain't the theme of this intro and ultimately this whole episode, more normal people. Por favor.
Amen. Anyways, without further ado, here's Will.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger. For the ones who get it done.
All right, y'all. We are here with a hell of a candidate, Will Rollins, in California, Maddie's home state. So we're particularly excited. Well, welcome to the show. Tell us a little bit about your campaign. Where are you running?
Yes, also my home state. So it's great.
Yes.
Guys, yep, SoCal native. And I'm running in California's 41st district. So this is a brand new congressional district that was created in 2022. And it's got a huge chunk of the Inland Empire, which is Corona, Lake Elsinore, Menifee, big cities like that. And then it goes all the way out to the Coachella Valley. So Palm Springs, Rancho Mirage, Palm Desert, La Quinta, Indian Wells. If you've been to a bachelorette party in Southern California, I've probably seen you in Palm Springs. So that seems to be like the most common person we see now.
Or Coachella, of course.
Right. Coachella also. Although I'm too old for Coachella now, but yes.
I'm getting too old as well, but I've definitely had a couple years down there, Coachella.
Did you camp? Did you camp?
No. Oh my God, I could never. Only because I just value sleep too much, you know? And it's just like, it's not an option when you camp at Coachella. I feel like it's just so loud. Everyone just parties all night.
Yeah. Tough to recover from that. Especially Congress. So
yeah, I feel like those things could be a little hard to balance. I'm curious too, for people that aren't, you know, familiar with the district, it's huge. I mean, I feel like California districts are huge. Like, what is the makeup of the district? What's sort of the political landscape there?
Yeah, it's a 50-50 split in registrations.
Oh, wow.
Almost identical number of registered Republicans and registered Democrats. And then there are about 90,000 independent voters. So a lot like the entire country, split right down the middle. And that's pretty much our congressional district, the country in a nutshell right there.
Wow, that's crazy. I mean, I'm curious, like, what the initial strategy is, like, what, obviously turning out your base, but this big pot of independent voters, I'm curious, like, how you're approaching them.
Yeah, I mean, mainly what I need to do is get to know people, because I ran in 2022, had a job in law enforcement before running for office. I was a federal prosecutor, and I worked in counterterrorism and counterintelligence cases, and helped prosecute some of the people who attacked the Capitol on January 6th. And that's what originally prompted me to run. But I had a completely different career. And so going from that job to a job where the goal is to get people to know who you are, to be more self-promotional, was a big change for me. So in the midterms, I came close to Calvert, got about a 4-point race. It was 48-52. But in 2024, with a presidential election with higher turnout, we've got a much better chance to flip the seat. And so a big part of our strategy this second time around is making sure that the voters who didn't get a chance to know me in 2022 when the turnout was low actually get a chance to see me. Because where they did get to know me in the Coachella Valley, which is where I live with my partner, Paolo, in Palm Springs, we did really well. We beat Calvert by 20 points. But in the Inland Empire, where it's a very expensive media market, the turnout was way lower. My name ID was much lower. And so a big part of the second campaign is making sure people actually just get a chance to see me and see what I stand for and the contrast between the two campaigns.
Yeah. And I'm so curious too, in terms of turnout, because obviously California at least is marketed by the Republicans as this like blue state, although it's like obviously a little bit more of a mixing pot of personalities and, you know, POVs than like people like to, you know, sort of give it credit for. I mean, Kevin McCarthy, hello. But regardless, you know, of that, I am curious, like, what you do about turnout. Like, New York has the same issue. People sort of just ride the coattails of, oh, it'll be fine, we're a blue state, but like don't sort of seem to see the bigger picture. And so I'm curious, like, what your thoughts are on trying to push people out the door and be like, guys, you need to vote. Like, what does that look like?
Yeah. I mean, people need to get their asses off the couch this election. If you care about women's reproductive freedom, if you care about the freedom to choose your own leaders, if you care about, you know, affordable housing in Southern California, if you care about having a job where you don't have to sit in traffic for 6 hours each day to commute to and from the Inland Empire to LA or Orange County and sitting in bumper to bumper gridlock, you've got to show up and vote. And there has to be a meaningful strategy from people like me who are running to flip these purple congressional districts to do that. And fortunately, one of the only benefits of losing once is you know where all the Democrats are that didn't show up in the midterms. And so our strategy this time around is to literally knock the doors of the Democrats who didn't vote in 2022. And there are tens of thousands of them in this congressional district. And a lot of them have had Calvert for over 30 years. And they've seen somebody in a deep red seat who they never thought they had a chance to beat finally get almost defeated in the midterms. And so I always like to say one of the biggest earned media opportunities we got came when they were actually counting the ballots in my congressional district in November of 2022, because our race went uncalled for a week afterwards. And I had people come up to me after the election and they said, we didn't even know that we had a chance to beat Ken Calvert until we saw them counting your name on the ticker on CNN for a week after the ballots came in. And so fortunately, this time we're on the map. And so more and more people in the Inland Empire and in Riverside County are getting fired up to flip this district. But we also know that we just have to knock the doors. And so to anybody who's listening to this, if you want to come out and help us in Corona, WillRollinsForCongress.com, click the volunteer link. It's close to LA. There are a lot of people who've been driving in and helping us do that. We've got a great volunteer network from all of our voters already in Corona, Lake Elsinore, Menifee, but we need the help from all over Southern California to knock on these tens of thousands of doors to make sure we get the Democratic turnout where we need it to be.
Yes, for sure. And just like need that Kim Kardashian quote remixed what you just said of get your ass up and vote instead of work, the problematic quote. Okay, obsessed with all of that. I think it's such a theme, I think, that we're seeing in so many districts of like there is this just untapped, well, yeah, not necessarily even untapped, but just group of voters, especially on the Democratic side, who sit out. And it's unfortunate to see. And I think that's hopefully something that we can change in races across country, but especially in tight ones like yours. So I love all of that. I'm also curious about where specifically, like in the district, I don't know if you said this, like where you reside, like what does your day to day look like? What are the things you love to do? Who you love to do it with?
Yeah, well, I'm actually a shell of a human being since I've been campaigning for 3 years.
Yeah, is he like MIA? Are you like, where do I find this dude on the map?
You're like, genuinely, I don't know what I like to do anymore.
Right now, actually. But no, I love Palm Springs. I mean, my partner and I live there and I grew up going there all the time as a kid. And I didn't come out till late. I thought about enlisting in the military after 9/11, but Don't Ask, Don't Tell was in place and didn't want to give up on my goal of doing something in counterterrorism. So I went to college, took Arabic, applied to the CIA, never heard back from the CIA. Very stubborn. So I continued to keep going into law school and eventually got hired to join the Justice Department as a federal prosecutor. And so, you know, I grew up and had a career where my job was to work in public safety and I loved it. And I think that that's kind of what's driven a lot of my professional decisions has been, you know, trying to get into a career of public service. And as great as that is, you also need to unwind. And there's no better place to do that than the Coachella Valley. And I mean, you know, when we have some downtime, the hikes, and I'm sure, you know, your listeners who've visited Palm Springs or the Coachella Valley or any, you know, part of the desert out in Southern California know how beautiful it is. And it is an incredible place to relax. It's an incredible place if you love the outdoors, if you like to golf, if you like to hike, if you like to, you know, go to the
draft. Pickleball?
Play pickleball. My mom is in a league, you know, so there's
the first time I ever played pickleball was in Palm Springs. And now I'm just a pickleball girly. I've been playing like every week. I'm obsessed.
If I can't like reach her, I know she's at pickleball. I'm like, okay.
Yeah.
I've actually gotten beaten by my mom and her friends playing pickleball.
That's why I love it. It's like, I know we were talking about this last week, how I was playing with my friend against our two guy friends and they were like, oh, like we'll try and take it easy on you. I'm like, this is not like a gendered sport. Like, and then it's also not like an age sport. Like I could get my ass beat by a 7-year-old and you can get your ass beat by a woman. Like, sorry, it's just how it goes.
Probably beat their asses, I bet, in that game.
We did, we won.
Came in cocky and they went home humiliated as they should. So good for you guys. Yeah. But we love it. And I mean, you know, the downtime is few and far between. And as I said earlier, I really have to spend so much time in the western part of our district this cycle, because that is the part of the community and the congressional district that doesn't yet know me. So a lot of our days are spent on the road out there campaigning. Just got to go to the Corona Chamber of Commerce event last week and speak to all their members. I mean, that's an organization that, you know, people think of as like a Republican leaning crowd, right? But if they see somebody like me and I start talking to them about my story, my work in law enforcement, working for a Republican governor right out of college, even though I've been a lifelong Democrat, worked for Schwarzenegger, my first job after graduating, I actually get to make some inroads with people who have this vision of what a stereotypical Democrat is in their head. And I get to kind of defy that. And that's one of my favorite parts about campaigning, almost as fun as pickleball.
Totally. Well, I feel like also it's like there used to be this concept of like the Big Ten, which is starting to like come back a little bit more on the Democratic side. And just understanding that there can be many different variations of a Democrat is so important, not just for Republicans and understanding that, but also for Democrats. Like it's not everyone has to be cut like carbon copy. It just doesn't work that way. Like that's just not how the world goes around. So I think those conversations are super important. You mentioned going across the, you know, across the district. I'm curious if you have any like podcasts, music playlists, like what's on the radio, the aux cord, give us the tea.
I mean, Sabrina Carpenter's Espresso.
A classic. Now, I'm
just getting on the bandwagon there. But
she is my pop queen.
She's good. And then for my nerdier moments, Talking Feds with Harry Littman. I miss my job a lot, actually, because helping the FBI catch bad guys is a lot more fun than asking people for money. And talking feds gives me a little bit of my nostalgia when I'm looking to catch up on news about federal law enforcement and what's going on in the courts right now. So that's a great one too.
Very cool. Is that a podcast?
Yeah, it's a podcast.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay.
It's everything that has to do with our federal courts, I would say. And kind of the most prominent news developments in the federal court system, although there's been a lot of coverage of the recent criminal trials too. And he's got some great guests on there who are experts in the you know, both federal and state criminal systems in New York, for example, after the verdicts last week. And having people like that to kind of give their take is one of my nerdier guilty pleasures when I'm not, you know, listening to Dua Lipa or Sabrina Carpenter.
I love that. No, that's a great balance. We're all about balance on this show. You know, you got to get the politics in and the reality TV. It's a dance and you got to do it. Well, I was also curious, what have you had any like kind of crazy stories on this campaign of like any drama, any tea, any like people coming for you in annoying ways? Like, I'm curious what stands out in terms of, honestly, not even just this campaign, but your entire, like you said, 3 years of like campaigning.
Yeah. I'll share a funny sort of thing that exists in campaigns that I didn't know existed until I actually started doing it. And there are these people called trackers. And they follow you around. They're paid by big, you know, partisan organizations or independent expenditures. And they're literally paid to show up and ask you questions on their iPhone. And they get right in your face and they say things like, why are you okay with our country being invaded by illegal immigrants? Or why is it that you want to mutilate children's genitalia? I mean, they ask you these outrageous questions and try to get you to react. And that's
what?
Like somebody's full-time job and they show up. And so the first couple,
I had no idea anything about this. What?
Yeah, it's a tracker. I don't know how they hire. I haven't really seen any job postings for it.
I wonder if the left has any. Sounds fun for a day.
I think we do it too, but our tracker, she's actually very nice. She just, you know, and she'll sometimes like apologize. She's like, I'm sorry, you know, but I think they're paid if you react. So I don't react, which is also kind of weird because somebody's like right in your face trying to get, and I guess they try to take a clip and have it go viral, or then they put it into their commercials against you later. So I just thought that was funny. I never knew that it was like somebody's job to just follow you around and try and provoke you into, like, I guess, getting angry or saying that you support Satan or something, you know?
Oh my gosh. That's wild. Wild.
By the way,
it's like legal. It's like literally like legal stalking. That is crazy.
It's weird. It's weird. I also, another funny thing that's happened to me, a lot of people will comment on appearance as a candidate. So I've had some people come up to me. Somebody came up to me at a fundraiser once and they were like, you know, you look 15 years older than your partner. And I was like, oh, well, we're actually just 3 years apart. And he's like, yeah, but you look 15 years older. And I was like, thank you.
Okay. And? Like,
that is,
I was like, I guess insane. I guess the Botox starts covering it.
Yeah. So the trackers do that. Is that what you said?
That was just a random guest.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
That is crazy. That's kind of like, you know, when someone tries to be like, oh, you look like so-and-so, and they like pull up a picture of someone on the phone and they're like heinous. And you're like, why are we still doing this with people? Like, it's just.
No, there's some people that truly lack any feel.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
Tact is
out the door. But wait, speaking of your partner, do we have a fun meet cute?
Oh, yeah. Our story of meeting is not as exciting as my parents' story, which I think is a better story. But our story of meeting is we were just at a mutual friend's birthday party in New York. And that was now a long time ago. I was 26. He was 23. And now we've been together almost 14 years. And convinced, we did long distance for a while, but I eventually convinced him to move to Southern California, and he's still holding it against me. He's grown to love it, of course, but especially when it's winter, and you know, you do, if you visit your friends on the East Coast, and you realize just how lucky we are to have it, especially in springs. So
yeah, for sure.
Oh yeah.
Well, wait,
let's hear the parents' story.
Oh yeah, this one's much better because my parents met at a Halloween party, actually, and my dad walks up to my mom at a bar And he's like, is this guy bothering you? Somebody was sitting next to her. And she was like, no. And he's wearing a wig, I guess, in some costume. And he asks her out on a date. And he was working for a newspaper at the time. And so the way that he was able to convince her to go on the date with him was by saying that he would give her early access to the classified ads because she was looking for an apartment. And they had all the apartments listed in the classified ads. So she shows up at their first date and his wig is gone. And he has all this gray hair, which I'm obviously starting to get now myself. And she's like, who are you? He looks like a totally different person because the Halloween costume wasn't. Mm-hmm. And yet they ended up getting married. So I just love that story because it's a reminder of how important it is to, you know, use hair dye when you're trying to meet.
That's so funny. Or just like, you know, do your due diligence if you're going to ask someone out at a Halloween party when you're in costume. Like, you got to make sure this person, you know, knows the real you. That's so cute, though. I love that.
Yeah, it was funny. He was persistent. I think he asked her to marry him like 7 times before finally. Yeah.
There's
finally
something in the water with that. Because also Joey B and Jill Biden, hello. Mm-hmm. Same sort of situation. I think if someone proposes to me, I'm just going to say no continually. And then that way I'm like manifesting that it's like a good situation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
It's meant to be a strategy.
Persistence. Yeah. Persistent. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. We're onto something. Well, something also in the category of persistence is obviously this particular campaign. You're still in it. You're running, you know, towards election day for voters that want to get to know like where, you know, you're at on issues. Like what are like the top two issues that you know, want voters to know about in terms of where you stand and what are those stances?
Yeah. I mean, I think most people right now are worried about the economy and the cost of living. And I totally get it because in places like Corona, a studio apartment is $2,000 a month. I mean, that's outrageous. And it's becoming completely unaffordable for people to live in Southern California. And so I think we need people in the House of Representatives that are actually going to try to fight rising costs. And unfortunately, that's not what my opponent's been doing. You know, and I talk about a couple of different ways that we should try and fight it. But if you look at, especially for people who have been in California for a while, who are trying to buy a house, for example, or trying to just get into the market, you know, the interest rates are crazy. Everybody knows that right now. And the price of like a first time home for anybody, a small family, single family home, record highs in Riverside County. And we've got a member of Congress who voted to make it harder for us to deduct the interest on mortgages, right? That's something that happened in 2017. So now you're paying more for your house every year because you live in California, thanks to this Republican guy. And so a lot of people think Republicans are better on taxes. Well, this guy's not. He made it harder for you to deduct your mortgage interest. That sucks. It's hard enough as it is to buy a home in Southern California. We also, whether you like it or not, we pay a lot in state and local taxes. Your member of Congress, if you're living in our district, voted to make it harder for you to deduct those state and local taxes, making your life way more expensive. He's also a huge real estate owner in the district. He's, you know, raised rents on his tenants as all are feeling a squeeze. A member of Congress doing that, who's also made $20 million since he was first elected in 1992, in part by using earmarks to benefit his own real estate investments. So he's vacant parcels of land. He earmarks a transportation project nearby, turns around and sells the project for a huge profit in a short period of time. And believe it or not, Fox News did a 7-minute documentary talking about this guy's use of earmarks to benefit his own real estate. So that's something that I hope voters know and think about when they go to the polls, because it doesn't matter what party you belong to. You should have a member of Congress who's working for you, not the other way around. And I hope voters remember that this November. I think, you know, one of the other things that I hear a lot about from people are rising healthcare costs and prescription drugs, especially in the Coachella Valley. And again, you know, people paying out-of-pocket costs that are astronomical. We just had the last Congress that passed a bill to cap the cost of out-of-pocket prescription drugs at $2,500 per year and to cap the cost of insulin for diabetics at $35 a month. Both of those bills, Calvert voted against. So again, you're paying more because this guy's voting to increase your prices. And I think we got to just really hammer that economic message, especially in the Inland Empire, try to get more affordable housing. more funding for that, more infrastructure projects that create six-figure jobs in a county where the median income is $70,000 per household. You know, the 91-71 exchange in Corona, that's going to create six-figure jobs for apprentices. Don't need to have a college degree for this job. And it's funded by, in part, by the bipartisan infrastructure bill that, again, you know, my opponent voted against. So I'm trying to talk a lot about those kitchen table issues because they come up again and again with our voters.
Totally. Guy seems whack, to say the least. And like, what is his deal? Like, obviously, loves his real estate.
I was totally going to ask that same question, but I was like, honestly, I know his deal now. Like, that's absolutely nuts that he, for 30 years or whatever he said, has been doing that. And that, and it's so sad to see too, because I think like even Republican voters, if they were aware of those things, which they probably aren't in some ways, like they wouldn't be on board. Like most Americans, like their biggest thing is this kind of like populism angle of like corporate greed and, you know, that then bleeding into our politics. And like, that is the message that I think everyone's so over and wants fresh people who are like representing their interests. And this guy is clearly not that. Like, so
100%.
I feel like my answer.
Yeah. I mean, he was first elected when I was 8. So he's been here for 32 years. He, again, has a huge increase in net worth, $20 million on $170,000. That's the congressional salary, right? And I think what I've seen again and again across party lines is people want, and people are understandably angry at DC because Washington is broken. The question is, can we channel that into the right place? And the right place, in my mind, is banning members of Congress from using their positions to enrich themselves, banning members of Congress from trading stocks, term limits, so we don't have the same people representing us in Congress for 3+ decades, a lifetime ban on lobbying by former members of Congress, ending Citizens United to get massive corporate money and independent expenditures out of politics so that you don't have to raise $10 million to win a congressional seat. I mean, the incentives are so screwed up for people to run for Congress. And I know this firsthand, having done it for as long as I have now. We have to get more normal people into our government or we're going to be in deep shit. And that's what I just keep telling voters. And I don't think so much of it has nothing to do with party. And so many of us in both parties are angry with DC. So let's unite on some basic reforms that really should apply to people in both parties, right?
Yes, exactly that.
Especially the term limits. My God. Like, can somebody, like, guys, like, you've been there for 30 years. Maybe, like, think about a little new career change. Let's switch it up, get a hobby.
Yeah, and it's so crazy, especially when you made yourself rich after being in Congress for so long. Like, go use your money then. Like, just what is it? Where is it going then? Like, what are you using it for if you're not going to retire and go chill on a beach somewhere? Get out of there.
Right, right. Change is good. It's okay to hand over. Even it's like what I think is interesting about him is he wouldn't even pass the torch to a younger Republican, right? To say, okay, I've done it long enough. Let me encourage you, younger Republican, to get into this seat. He wants to hang on. And
how old is he?
He's 72-ish, something like that.
Okay. Yeah.
So a lot of Americans retire by that point. And I think, you know, some people just like the power and they like the status, and that's the reason they're running. And we've seen too many members of Congress also believe that it's part of a reality show, that like it's all about angertainment, right? And if you just get clicks and be extreme, you elevate your own profile. And some people crave that. And those are not the kinds of people that we want running the federal government in this country.
That's so true. No. Yeah. And we see it on both sides. It's got to change.
It's like a symbiotic relationship. It's like one, you know, they cause the reaction of one another, and the more clicks, the more views. I mean, I could see how that would be like totally addicting too. I mean, ask any celebrity. I'm sure they could like vouch for it.
We've experienced it. We've had a few viral videos where like
oh my God,
juiced up going on our phones. Like, I get that.
Yeah. Part of it's, you got to be human in some level. Yeah. Part of it's human. And I think for some people in Congress, if it's the only thing that they've done, it's so attached to their self-worth and identity that they have trouble letting it go, even though it's good for the country to pass the torch to the next generation. It's just people can't let it go because it's become tied to their own self-worth, which is a reason term limits are helpful, right? It's like, it just is what it is. It ends and there is a forced transfer to the next generation. And I know there's trade-offs to that, but I just think that you know, in general, the public is so upset with the system, and we so desperately need new leadership in all different kinds of levels of our government, that I ultimately, at the end of the day, came down in favor of those, because I think it's going to help restore faith in the system. And that's what we need now more than ever.
Yeah. And definitely, bring more normal people into office.
Normal people, please. Just pretty please.
What a concept. What a concept.
It's really, the bar is so low. It's so fucking low. But nonetheless, I thank you. This was amazing. We loved hearing about you and your campaign, and want to make sure also people can continue to follow along. So you can plug all of the things, the website, the socials, and just how to keep in touch.
Yeah. So WillRollinsForCongress.com, and then WillRollinsCA is our Instagram handle, I think. And then I'm like, wait, what is it? But yeah, WillRollinsCA. And then, like I said, I mean, if you're interested in helping us out, you can go to the website, and there are volunteer links, there are donate links. But the big thing we really need to do, like we were talking about at the beginning, is just get the turnout up. And so for people who want to come out and knock doors in the district, that's a huge help to us. And then, of course, resources, because of our broken system. And I always say, I appreciate the irony of asking for money so that I can get money out of politics. But unfortunately, the reality is we need a majority that actually wants to end Citizens United and end this broken campaign finance system that we have. Yeah. So it's a necessary evil at the moment, but hopefully we can end it.
For sure. Totally. Yeah. You got to play the game, unfortunately. Yeah.
Exactly.
All right. Well, thank you. This was awesome.
Thank you guys. Really appreciate you having me on.
Hey guys, popping in with a reminder to sign up for the GovHub newsletter. This weekly pop of politics is designed to share action items, resources, and quick links to civic engagement tools and topics directly to your inbox. Save it, share it, and sign up for a pinch of productive politics today by going to girlonthegov.com or visiting this episode's description.